Encryption. It's been around almost as long as the ability to count, yet it remains a difficult technology for CIOs to implement. Robert Bigman spent 30 years in the CIA, including 15 as its chief information security officer. Now he's an independent cybersecurity consultant and president of 2B Secure. He joins me now with some practical advice for approaching encryption. Bob, great to have you on.
Good morning, Tom.
All right, so let's talk about, say, this fingerprint data. Now, we know that 5.6 million people had their data stolen on fingerprints. The number last week was 1 million. And so a lot of people are saying, should this data have been encrypted? My question is, should it have been? Would it have helped? And what are some of the big misconceptions federal agencies tend to have about encryption?
Well, thank you very much. Well, the obvious answer, of course, is yes, it should have been encrypted. But in the case of the OPM hack, I'm not sure it would have helped a whole lot. In this case, understand that what would happen is someone had stolen actual credentials of an authorized user. And the way most corporations and government agencies use encryption is once you're logged on, once you've even stolen an account or are using someone else's credentials, the data is going to be decrypted for you just as easy as it's going to be decrypted for an authorized user. They don't use encryption as an access control mechanism. They just use it as a way to secure the file system. So it will decrypt data for anyone who's authorized for data to be encrypted. That's not the way I would recommend doing it, and that's not what is recommended as best practices. That is how the way, however, most government agencies are doing it. And I think that's what would have occurred in the OPM case.
So that means that, which piece of the data then should be encrypted?
So the data should be encrypted. The database itself that carries the sensitive information should be encrypted, but it needs to be encrypted in a way that's not tied to the operating system or the application that's doing the encryption. For example, with Oracle or any of the other commercial database systems, they provide an encryption capability, and they're fine for what they do. The best way to do it is what we call in the intelligence community black box encryption, in which your encryption technology and keys are stored separately and accesses are stored separately from the actual encryption application you want to encrypt. In that way, the encryption not only serves to protect the data, but provides you an extra level of access control. So if you're an authorized user, you obviously have to jump through the first hoop of getting access to the application, like the Oracle database. But you also have to jump through a hoop in order to be able to use the encryption keys. That's a second hoop. And had they used that in the OPM case, my guess is the Chinese hackers would not have had access to those keys.
So it's not a matter necessarily of the technology of encryption, but the way people architect it.
Absolutely. You know, the big misunderstanding with everyone, and believe me, I experienced this myself in government, is people misunderstand encryption technology. The big misunderstanding is they think encryption is hard and encryption key management is easy. And true, the actual truth is the reverse is true. Encryption is actually very easy. You can get a lot of different products to do encryption. It's the key management, where you store the keys, who has access to the keys, how you separate the keys. That's really the important part and always the hard part.
So it sounds like the way most federal agencies set it up now is they have a really good lock on the door, but the key is right under the mat where people expect it to be.
Pretty much. Most software applications, most software encryption technologies actually store the key with the data.
So that means then that the person's credential that might have the information about the key, they should almost have a separate credential in a separate area, a separate database, separate network for their credentials, that is for their keys, as they do from the rest of the access that they might have?
Exactly. So, I'd point people to, NISPUB, NIS Special Pub 821. I sound like a bureaucrat, but 821 is probably one of the best documents NIST ever produced, and it really explains in good detail, although it's only 70 pages long, it's good details about exactly how to do what you just described.
Yeah, because NIST does spend a lot of effort on those 53 series of publications, and we don't think they're bureaucrats. Every time they update one, we have NIST on to explain what's new in it, so it's good stuff. But you would think that would be so widely promulgated throughout the government since it comes from NIST, and yet it sounds like people ignore it.
They do. In the rush to get things done and to get tasks accomplished, the very last thing people are going to do is read a 70-page document on exactly how to do things. One of the key things I see time and time again is people go out and buy encryption products and don't have that detailed plan. And, cryptography is something you don't want to get wrong. take a lesson from someone who's learned. You want to get it right every time, and it requires you to really do that detailed plan. That's what 821 is about, is how to do that. And then you can go ahead and have some degree of confidence that you can encrypt your data securely and smartly.
We're speaking with Robert Bigman. He's an independent cybersecurity consultant who had 30 years at the CIA. And there's a lot of encryption products out there. Do they usually come with their own key management piece? And is it a matter of, how do people go about evaluating products before they apply them to their databases and networks?
Right. Again, I'll have to go back. The first point is you have to have that plan. You have to understand, what you're encrypting and, more importantly, why you're encrypting it. What are the goals of encrypting it? Is it just to protect the media? Is it just to protect the file system? Or is it also to provide access control? I would argue that if you're going to go down this path to encrypt data, you also ought to use it as an access control mechanism. It's probably the best access control mechanism you can have. Once you make that decision, then you can use the NIST guides, both 142 and, as I mentioned, 821, to decide what exact requirements you have for encryption. Most people buy software-based encryption. I believe it's weaker than hardware-based encryption, which is the stronger capability and to protect, frankly, if it was my own sensitive information, which it was in OPM, I would prefer that they use hardware-based encryption.
And are there any cost metrics that agencies can have? Because that's the first thing that comes out of their mouths is, we didn't have the budget for all of this, or it's expensive to implement encryption, or especially hardware encryption. But is there a good metric for what it should cost in terms of your total IT operation budget?
I've not actually seen or read an actual metric that measures the cost and performance against software and hardware-based cryptography. They probably do exist. I'll be honest with you, though. Hardware cryptography is not expensive. These are not elaborate boxes that require a lot of maintenance and require a lot of integration. They tend to work outside the network and basically use standard, what we call APIs, to talk to the application. Compared to other expenditures you make in cybersecurity for authentication, for auditing, these encryption investment, which I think is a better investment than the ones I just mentioned, are really very inexpensive.
And what about cloud computing and mobility, the two big things happening in federal and, I guess, all commercial computing? How do those affect how you go about encryption?
Yeah, they actually make the argument even stronger for hardware-based cryptography because both in cloud and, more importantly, in mobility, speed is paramount. You want to get performance, ensure that people can have usable devices, and you're getting the advantage of cloud performance, which is usually off-prem, and you would need to have go through various different communication connections. Speed is very important. Software-based encryption, you tend to see an impact on performance. In fact, I've never used it where I haven't seen an impact on performance. Hardware-based cryptography works not necessarily at line speeds, but much, much, much faster because you're offloading both the cryptography and the communication support to a black box. Tends to work a lot better. And users don't really even tend to notice that type of cryptography.
And a final question. Okay, we've established hardware is the better way to do it, and key management is really the key to the whole thing. But if you have something that's encrypted and someone does not have the key, is it safe to say that encryption algorithms today are still strong enough that without the key, nobody's ever going to get to that data?
Right. So my suggestion would be that when you go choose an encryption product, you have to make sure it's FIPS 140-2 certified. And you have to be very careful because some vendors will say it's been built to 140-2 standards or we have it in for 140-2 evaluation. Both of those are not good enough. You want to choose a product that says it has been certified by an independent laboratory, and NIST has a recommended list of laboratories that can evaluate the cryptography and ensure that both the cryptography algorithms are strong, the key management strong, and it's running in a mode, what they call a cryptographic mode, that protects and ensures the integrity of the cryptographic process.
All right. Robert Bigman is an independent cybersecurity consultant and president of 2B Secure. Thanks so much for joining me.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
It's easy to share this information.